The Old Dogs REI Network podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/olddog, that's healthiq.com/olddog, to see if you qualify.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manicero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast and subscribe. We got a great show for you today. We are going to be talking to Matt Terrio. And Matt is a Marine Corps Desert Storm veteran who enjoyed 15 successful years in the music business as a record producer and label owner. When the digital download killed the record store business, he found virtually everything that he had built become obsolete in a matter of months. The demise of his music business was swift and unforgiving to the point that Matt was forced to start life personally and professionally from square one at the age of 34. The transition from a seven-figure-a-year salary to $7 an hour bagging groceries was a humbling one, to say the least. Well, Matt, wow, you got a great story to share. I just want to welcome you officially here to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Awesome. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great having you on. And, you know, I kind of gave a brief overview there, but really, I think the folks here, as you know from our intro here and from the information we exchanged, that the, you know, our audience is a group of people that are either approaching retirement or already in retirement that are looking at real estate investing as a means to either supplement their retirement or, you know, to sort of maximize their retirement funds. So hopefully you have some great information to share. I know, you know, making up for lost time is something that you had to do here, and maybe you can share that a little bit, you know, and as you share your background with us about your past.
Sure, sure. So you want the story?
Tell me the story.
All right, here comes the story. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I spent the next, I don't know, 15 years or so of my life in the music business. Had a small little independent record label with major label distribution. Never had any like household name type success really, but did do very well for ourselves. We had a good solid little formula where we'd just release a record every month. We'd sell 30, 40,000 of those things and then start all over again next month. And that worked really well for us for a really long time until one month that formula stopped working. And we're like, we're scratching our head wondering what was going on. And so we threw more money at it the next month and it worked even less. And just through the law of diminishing returns, within 6 months, we ran the whole business right into the ground. I had to file bankruptcy. And shortly after that came the divorce. And then shortly after that came a giant long job search and ending up bagging groceries. So I went from a seven-figure year to $7 an hour in about 6 months.
Yikes. Oh,
yeah, at the time, I was just totally scratching my head, had no idea what was going on. In hindsight, it's crystal clear. But at the time, it was just, you know, we didn't know what hit us. And what had really happened was the small little underground independent record labels that did the type of music that didn't really show up on the radio or MTV or anything like that. That audience that really embraced that type of music, the fans of that type of music, they embraced the digital download really, really quickly. And they basically just stopped going into music stores and buying CDs and buying records and buying tapes and stuff. So that it crushed us really quickly. And, you know, when this all happened, the general population hadn't even really discovered what a digital download was yet. I mean, iTunes, I don't even think was in existence by the time this happened to us.
Oh, yeah. I think we had like CD Baby. I was a musician back then, and we used to go through CD Baby. They would issue all of our CDs, and that was a big deal. And I don't even know if they exist anymore. Maybe they're all digital now. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. Great book, by the way. His book is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Did you read his book, Derek Sievers?
No, I didn't.
Oh, he's got a, I forget the title of the book, but it was great. And he was the founder of CD Baby, and he has a fantastic story.
Ah, neat.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you're not still bagging groceries. At least I haven't seen you down at my local market.
No, that was what, 11, 12 years ago, I think now. I guess close to 15 years ago. And I've been telling the story for a while.
Hey, you almost got old dog status coming up.
I know. Like, I'm happy to say I'm 48 and I didn't hit the 50 year old threshold for the show.
we'll let you on anyway.
Yeah. So, so there was one day where it just kind of, after about 6 months or so and being mad at the world, pissed off, blaming everybody for everything other than looking at myself for any, you know, taking any responsibility, just came to the realization that, wow, no one is coming to save me. Because up to that point, life was really easy for me as far as music went. I didn't have to set goals. I didn't have to have to-do lists. I just got up and did my life, and it just worked. I was very fortunate. Had no idea how fortunate I was at the time until you hit that low point. And after about 6 months of like, wow, if I don't do something about this, this is probably going to be my future right here. And I was 34 years old when I was bagging groceries, and the grocery store manager was coincidentally 34 years old as well. And so we had a lot in common just because of our age. And so we got to be not close, but we got friendly. And he said, I was telling him my story, and he said, Matt, you know, if you want your life back, if you want the money back, you got to look into real estate, because it really is the final frontier where the average person has a legitimate shot at creating real wealth. And I remember those words so clearly, and I've said them probably a million times since. And I had no idea whether what he was saying was true or not. But at that moment in my life, I didn't have any other options. I didn't have a plan B. I mean, I was living my plan B, bagging groceries. And I said, okay, well, if that's the final frontier, if that's what you say, then I'm going for it. And that's how my whole journey on real estate started, was it just from that little push right there. And I went home that night, took a bottle of wine home with me, and hopped on the computer, and it was just the computer, Mr. Google, and the bottle of wine, and started looking up everything real estate, and found an aunt that I had that I haven't talked to in probably 15 years, and found out that she was the number one real estate agent just three cities over in Seal Beach. You know where Seal Beach is, Bill?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so in Seal Beach, she'd been the number one agent like for 27 years. And so I just fired off an email to her through her real estate agent website and asked if she wanted to have lunch. We had lunch the next day, and within 24 hours, I was enrolled in school to get my real estate license. And so that's how it started.
Wow. Did you actually move in as an agent, start doing Sunday open houses
and the whole
nine yards?
I did. That was maybe my first lesson, is if you want to learn how to invest in real estate, don't ask a real estate agent. They're going to turn you into an agent, not a real estate investor.
Right.
But it was at that moment, I didn't really care, because I just needed to make more than the little $7 an hour I was making. So I did pretty well my first year. I got rookie of the year in the office, and then did better the next year and the next year and the next year. And about 4 years in, I had had a pretty good clientele, but there was one client specifically, a couple clients, but one client specifically that was just a dream client for a real estate agent. You know, they just, I didn't have to go on listing presentations. I didn't have to show them houses. Like, they just faxed in paperwork and told me to process it. And I'd process it and I got paid. And that was just a dream client for me. And there was one Saturday morning, we had an appointment at 10:30 a.m. I remember it specifically. I was working in Palos Verdes at the time. And I showed up in my suit and tie, had all their paperwork ready for their signatures. They showed up about 20 minutes later in jeans and a t-shirt, and they signed all their documents and they took off to enjoy the weekend. And I was stuck there to hold their house open. And it just hit me. I was like, wow, if this is really the final frontier where I can create wealth, I think I'm sitting on the wrong side of the desk. Uh-huh. And that's where I made this shift. I was made a point to, okay, in 3 months, I'm no longer going to be representing other people in their transactions. I'm going to be representing myself. I'm going to be buying and selling on my own behalf. And so I made a large investment into a real estate investing educational program that no longer exists, but I was fortunate that it was a good one. And I just took off from there, and I got my first deal done probably inside of 60 days. It was in Long Beach, and took a small little single family, converted into a fourplex. And then went about 8 months till I found my next deal. And that's when I kind of discovered how to wholesale properties. And so I started wholesaling properties, and then came up with a formula like, wow, if I keep on wholesaling, I'm never really going to be that financially free. It was really just a job, and you're only as good as your last flip. So I came up with a formula, just, okay, I'm going to wholesale six, and then I'm going to hold one, wholesale six, hold one, and wholesale five, and hold one, and flip four, hold one, flip three, hold one, until I got to a point where I was over 100 units. And per Robert Kiyosaki's definition of escaping the rat race, I had done it. I got my passive income to exceed my monthly expenses, and I essentially retired for about 30 days.
30 days only.
Yeah, I can only watch so much TV and do so much. And I got very bored. But that was the journey.
Wow. Wow. And that's really neat. They're remarkable. All in Southern California, huh?
Yeah. Well, actually, the flipping was happening. I had hooked up with a few turnkey operators here in California that were selling properties in the Midwest and the South. So I was basically representing their properties, and I'd go to RIA meetings and meetup groups and Chamber of Commerce meetings and Kiwanis clubs. I'd just go anywhere where there are people, and they'd give me a microphone, and I'd stand up, introduce myself, and say, hey, this is what I got, and this is what's in it for you. If you want some more information, come and see me. I'll give you a flyer. That was kind of my spiel. And so I would hit one or two of those networking events a day, and that's how I just turned everything around. And on the coast, we call this the land of money. And then in middle America is the land of property, of cheap property.
Right. Were you flipping remotely, or were you going out there and handling some of these transactions?
It started off where I was just referring customers to the turnkey operations, and I got a really good paycheck for that.
Gotcha.
And then when I started making enough money to where I was buying my own, then I would go out to visit my properties and started to build my teams out there. And then, 10, I don't know, I think we're in 12 different cities now. When I got 12 teams in 12 different cities, now we're a turnkey operation. Now we do the same thing that I was representing other people doing.
But you're in multiple states, right?
Yes, we're in 12 different markets right now.
Wow. Wow. And you're a real systems guy too, right? I mean, it sounds like I could tell, in your story, as you were putting these together, you seemed to get more efficient as you were going on, when you're wholesaling so many, and then you'd hold on to one, and you'd flip so many. And is that a big part of your success, you feel?
I think it is. Yeah. Where did I learn this? I was at some seminar, some workshop somewhere. And they talked about just documenting your process and turning that into an SOP, a standard operating procedure, and then being able to take that and delegate. And that's, definitely systems is a big part of our business.
That's neat. So today, what does your business look like?
Sure. So we've got about 100 rental units, just under 100 right now. We got all the way up to 300, and then we started reducing and just kind of increasing the quality of our property. So we've got about 100 units, 100 notes. So we've got a good mix of properties and notes, and we still do the turnkey operation. I run a wealth fund, Epic Wealth Fund, and it's for accredited investors that want to invest in what we do. So we do that, and we're just starting to look into a we've already started a new asset class, and we're starting to buy and sell and buy and sell or finance land.
Oh, neat. Neat. Yeah. That's really exciting. It sounds like you've definitely been all over the board in terms of real estate, you know, from agent to investor to many different asset classes. Mm-hmm. What would you say is your sort of biggest mistake? We all make mistakes, and I don't look at them as a bad thing. I learn more from my mistakes, actually, than I do from some things. And what would you say is sort of in that process, did you say, wow, this is something I really learned from?
Trying to go wide before going deep, trying to get bigger rather than getting better and more efficient at what was actually working. You know, there's a lot of different ways to make money in real estate. I mean, just countless strategies and markets that you could get involved in different capacities. And you just hear someone tell a story about how they're doing well, and that sounds really appealing, and you want to go try that out. And, oh, I'm going to go try out mobile home parks. I'm going to try out storage facilities. I'm trying multifamily. Let's go do this duplex strategy over here. And it's just, you hear all this great success and you just kind of want to do it all. Like you're
shiny object syndrome, right?
Totally, totally. Yeah. But it's not even so much a shiny object, because I'm successful with single family homes that cash flow in the Midwest and the South. And I remember my biggest mistake probably was after we hit about, 75, 80 properties of our own, and we were representing probably, probably about the same amount for our clients, our turnkey clients that we had under management. I was like, okay, let's try this multifamily thing. How difficult could it be? I mean, it's just like, instead of me buying 40 houses, I get 40 doors underneath one roof. And found out that it was a very different animal. And I went in just like, this is going to be no big deal. And it turned out to be a really big deal. And I found what I thought were just amazing deals. I've got a 50 unit in Memphis. I got for $1,000 a door. And I was like, wow, the bricks alone that built this building would cost more than $1,000 a door. This sounds like a smoking deal. And and then right on the heels of that, something else came up, and we got a 44 unit and then a 14 unit. And all of a sudden I had an 8 and a 12 unit. So I got all these units for just pennies. I was like, well, I'll just buy them and sit on them and wait till I'm ready. They're such a great deal. And taking that on that quickly, it turned out to be a huge nightmare. I got trying to do it remotely. What happened is I had a good team in place, a good property manager, a good contractor in place that were handling my single families. And I purchased the first property or first couple properties with the intent that he was going to do the rehab work for me and get him up and running. And he passed away. And so I was stuck with these properties with no feet or no boots on the ground. And so I kind of panicked and started hiring really quickly without doing the proper due diligence on the people. And I got screwed over by a couple contractors pretty badly and ended up rehabbing some of those properties more than once. And actually just sold them all this in the last 6 months. So I got all the multifamily off my plate and learned lots of lessons. I'm pretty smart at it now, and I'll probably revisit again, but I'm going to take a breather from multifamily for a while.
Yeah, I totally get it. Well, conversely, what would you say your biggest success has been in your real estate career?
You know, I think the biggest success was when I decided to shift my focus from creating or making piles of cash to creating streams of cash.
I love it.
Yeah, that one shift in focus, I think what really paid off in hindsight, because every day we're faced with, we've got a deal on the desk. Do we flip this property and make $30,000, or do we hold on to it for $300 a month? And that, when most people are faced with that, and logically you might say, okay, let me just do the math real quick. Yeah, the $300 a month is actually better in the long run. But when you're really faced with it and you've got a pile of cash there or this $300 a month, it gets pretty seductive. And, you know, most people will opt for the $30,000 cash in a real world scenario. But if your goal is to, you know, escape the rat race and create a residual income to where you are financially independent, where you're not relying on anybody else, that $300 a month is the much quicker, faster way to go. It just doesn't feel like it. It's so counterintuitive. You know, to create $300 a month of cash flow, I mean, you got to have what, I don't know, $350,000 in the bank at a 4 or 5% interest rate. And so to make that much cash, I mean, that's what you got to do, but 30 times, you got to do 12 deals to create the same cash flow, 12 flips to create the same cash flow than you did would just have to hold the one property. So when I made that shift and started following it and exercised some real discipline around that, I think that's like a lot of people that started when I was started, they're all wishing they kind of would have followed the same track.
Okay, that's great. I love it. I love that. You know, one thing I just say, I'm kind of looking back at what you just mentioned here, and you talked about the difficulty with the contractor. I exclusively buy out of state too. And I know you buy also in state, but I think overall, just any rentals, my number one issue is property management. I mean, mm-hmm. that's where I've learned more lessons and made more mistakes than sure. any other area. What's your approach on property management? With that many properties, wow. I mean, you've got to have a great system in place that makes that run smoothly with property management.
Yeah, and you're right. The real estate part is the easy part. As long as you know how to analyze a property, it's pretty difficult to mess up real estate. The risk is not in the real estate itself. It's in the people that you're working with. And I think every dime I've ever lost in real estate was either through directly or indirectly bad property management or a bad contractor. So you're right. You have to do as much due diligence on your property managers as you do your properties, the properties themselves. And so first part, when we're choosing a market, and a lot of people ask, how do we choose our markets? Which markets are the best markets? The best markets for us is where we have our best relationships, where we have our best teams. Because a good team can turn a mediocre market into a great market. And a bad team can turn the fantastic market into a really crappy market. So I'm right there with you with property management. So what we've put in place, and there's no foolproof system. I'd say if you're going to look for property management, I would say start with a referral from someone that you know that's achieving some sort of success with managing income property. But even that's not perfect. But I would say start with a referral. Second would be you're going to interview them, and they're on a job interview. They're going to be on their best behavior. They're going to tell you everything that you want to hear. So take that into consideration. One of the things that we do, which actually eliminates a lot of people right away, is we have a list of questions, and you can just go Google a bunch of questions on what to ask a property manager. There's 1,500 sites on there that have a list of questions, but leave one or two of those questions off the actual interview and then call back after hours and leave those questions on their voicemail and see how quickly you get a response when they call you back. So that's been a good test for us.
Great tip.
Yep. And then the other part with that many properties, one thing I learned when that my property manager, when they passed away, was you have to look at your business and evaluate where you have single points of failure and create redundancy in those areas. So in every market, we have at least two teams. We have at least two property managers, at least two contractors, and at least two realtors. And we make sure that they know about each other. And we don't pit them against each other. But we don't keep them a secret either. And what we found is that really increases performance. It reduces expenses just by them knowing about each other. So I would have, you want to diversify your teams as much as you'd want to diversify your properties. And when you find a new property manager, give them one property and just let's see how they do with that. Rather than, I mean, in our world, you know, we since we represent so many properties of our own and we represent our clients' properties, you know, we can easily say, here's 20, go put these to work. And we've done that before. And what we've done is those property managers haven't had the systems in place to take on all that load. And we've put property managers out of business just from that. So test them out with one property would be the other big key. So I'd say diversify your teams and test them with one property before you give them too many more.
Great tips, man. This is the stuff that people can take home with them. Good stuff.
You can't, and that's in no books either. You're not going to learn that until you lick a few wounds of your own.
Yeah, and I got my share.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. I could tell just where you went with that.
So. Oh, man, yeah. Well, you know, we have our listening audience, although, you know, we have a wide variety of people, but our target really are those folks that are 50 plus. And because they've, you know, got a unique situation, one, they're either approaching retirement and they're looking at what they have in terms of resources and realizing, and we're not going to thrive. We're not going to have the retirement of our dreams right now with what we have, with a pension and Social Security or whatever they may have tucked away, and they're concerned. And then there are those that are that thought they'd be fine that are already there. They're in retirement and they're going, gee, you know, this isn't cutting it. You know, inflation is crazy. All these issues affecting us. You know, or maybe they lost their funds in 2008. You know, the market crash and so forth. So they're looking at real estate as a means for them to get back where they want to be. What advice would you have? You know, imagine you're talking to your own parents or somebody you know that's older that is coming to you and say, Matt, you know, we're a little too old to flip, you know, we're you know, we don't have a timeline of, you know, 20 years down there. And and I don't want to be, you know, 90 years old, you know, trying to manage my rentals or whatever. What would you recommend that they do to take that step?
So how do they correct the course without doing any work? Sounds like what you just asked.
Well, kind of.
You know, you don't want to flip, you don't want to manage property, then maybe real estate is not the course. I think you can put systems in place to where you manage property managers. So you don't necessarily have to do the managing yourself, but you can't be uninvolved either. You know, passive income doesn't mean uninvolved income. And you know, what I had said, mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, we're all taught and raised in a way to where we work our entire lives. We save as much as we can. We make sacrifices along the way. And hopefully if we do it right at the age of 65 years old, we've saved a pile of money high enough to where it'll spin off a residual income that allows us to live the rest of our years, you know, in comfort. And that's a system that is not working for 99%, specifically 99%, per the Department of Health and Human Services, is not working for today's 65-year-olds. They're reaching the age of 65. They're either dependent or they are still working or they are no longer with us. And it's not a good situation. So as I kind of mentioned earlier, the faster path that rather than saving that pile of money to create the residual income, focus on creating the residual income and let the residual income create the pile. Just flip the script, flip the focus, and that's the fastest way. And you can do it in 1/10 the time than the rest of the world is going about it. And I always share that with people. I mean, that's really like the cornerstone of our entire education program is in our whole investing philosophy is that, you know, the traditional approach of where you're saving, you know, it takes you and I'm preaching to the choir right now. I'm talking to people that are listening that have already tried that plan and are realizing that they've hit the age of 50, 55, 60. And they're like, I don't think we're going to make it. I don't think it's going to turn out the way we thought it was, the way we'd planned our entire life. And so the only really option is you're going to have to focus on creating the residual income anyway. So whether you do that when you're young or middle-aged or in your retirement years, it's still the fastest approach. So I would start looking at analyzing all of the assets that you have. This is something that we do with our clients. Just make a list of all of your assets. I mean, from your investment properties to your stock portfolios to your cash value life insurance to your speedboats to your motorcycles to the gold and the silver you have buried in the backyard. All of just take cash. Assessment of all your assets and then calculate their annual return on investment. Then put them in from highest to lowest. So you create a list, put your highest returns on top, your lowest returns on the bottom, and start working from the bottom, reallocating those assets and turning them into investments that will actually put that return on the top, if that made sense, if you could follow. There's a lot of visuals there when we do this with our clients. Hopefully you followed me there. But for example, you know, you got a bunch of gold, say you had, you know, 50 grand of gold and it's, what's the annual return on that? Well, the annual return on that is zero. So you have to put that money to work for you. That money is retired before you've essentially retired yourself. So you want to put your money to work and have it work for you while you retire, change that philosophy. And so maybe that 50 grand works better inside of is a down payment on an investment property that gives you $250, $350 a month. And that's not going to change anyone's life significantly. But you do that four or five times, and all of a sudden you have an extra $4,000 or $5,000 a month coming in, right? That would be my advice to make up for lost time. There's only one way to do it. You have to create the residual income. Focus on creating that first and not going out and trying to save a bunch more money.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I think that's excellent. That's most people, you know, I ask that question, really don't go there with the idea of starting with the assessment first, which I think is really important because there are plenty listening too that have done well, and their concern is, you know, maintaining the returns on what sure. they have. So, you know, they're more passive in their investing. But it sounds like with the number of properties that you have, sometimes it's just a phone call a week, you know, for 10 minutes on the phone, 20 minutes, just checking in with the right property manager. Sometimes I have some properties I don't have to talk to them but once a month. And that really doesn't amount to a lot of time spent, you know, as long as you've got that strong person that you can trust on the other end. So, but I'm sure it sounds like you have that down with the number of properties.
Yeah, I mean, you're managing. It's really just bookkeeping and having somebody, you know, look at those books for you, which you can get for relatively cheap, you know, regular bookkeeper, you know, from 10 to 20 bucks an hour, and they work a few hours a month. So that's not a big expense. And then they go ahead and they bring in collect all of your incoming rents. They analyze the expenses with the rent rolls from your property manager. Then they give you a report. Now you can look at it. And if you have questions, you can go ahead and call the property manager. And if you don't have any questions, then you let it go till next month. You know, managing property managers is a lot easier than managing properties. And you're right. It's maybe 3-4 hours a month, depending on the size of your portfolio. But it's your money. It's your investment. It's your life. Isn't it not worth at least 3-4 hours of your own time to go ahead and maintain some sort of control over that rather than sending it to a financial planner and just hoping that they know what they're doing?
Right. Good advice. Well, Matt, your organization sounds very diverse and growing, and some neat stuff going on there. You mentioned education as well as your own holdings, working with clients. Where do you see your future? What are your plans for the? I mean, you're still a young guy. You know, only a couple more years till you're an old dog. But
thanks,
yeah, anytime you want encouragement, you know, just
tell me
give
more
me a call.
About how young could look like.
You know, we'll start to sending our our special coupons, AARP coupons to you and stuff. So you mentioned a little bit probably getting back into multifamily, but what are the plans for your business? What do you want to do? You want to grow into this multinational organization? What are your plans?
You know, I hit the, like I told you, this is like, was it the, I guess early 40s, so 41, 42, I retired for about 30 days. And I thought that's what I always wanted. I wanted to get to a point in life where I didn't have to do anything as fast as possible. That's really what I wanted to get. I just wanted to be lazy and not have to worry about bills. That was like my goal. That was my big aspiration in life. So I had that for 30 days. I wasn't wealthy or anything, but I did not have to work. Like, all my basic necessities were met. And when I decided, like, okay, this is not for me, this is not what I thought it was going to be, I went back to work. And I think growth is my biggest aspiration now. I don't know if I have an end point. I don't have a final destination. I just kind of evaluate, like today, am I further along than I was this time last year? And I think that's what's fulfilling and that's what makes me happy. So I kind of evaluate that based on residual income, passive income. So I just continue to focus on building that. And then, you know, I've got a 6-year-old son. I'm going to teach him all about it. And if he does a good job and he earns it and he's a responsible contributor to society, then it'll be something really nice to pass along to him and his future generations.
That's neat. I like that. Well, we are kind of wrapping up here. Gosh, there's a million other questions I could ask you. Got a great background, a great story. But we do a little section here before we finish up called Wrap It Up.
Hey, fellow old dogs. Before we jump into our Wrap It Up session, I just wanted to let you know that an important part of being a successful real estate investor is knowing how to regularly reduce your expenses. It's a big part of what I do every day to maintain a healthy real estate portfolio. Well, I try to do the same thing with my personal finances as well. And when I heard about a life insurance company that gives exclusive rates to those of us old dogs who try to eat right, exercise, and stay healthy, I got very stoked. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. For those of us who are trying to be healthy and keep our expenses down at the same time, it just makes sense. Learn more and get a free quote at healthiq.com/old dog. That's healthiq.com/old dog.
Basically, a series of quick questions just to get resources, more information for those that are still educating themselves and learning. So if you are ready, I will go ahead and start asking you our quick wrap-it-up questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Favorite real estate book?
I thought the Millionaire Real Estate Investor by Gary Keller was really good.
Yeah, that's a great one. How about favorite business book?
Business book. I like the book The Slight Edge, and I think it's the perfect companion book for whatever business you want to start.
Ooh, that's neat. That's the first time I've heard that one. That's great. How about most valuable website for success, of course, other than your own?
Most valuable website. I don't know. I don't know if I have a valuable website that I go to.
It could be one where you get, you go to on a daily basis. It could be just for information.
I use listsource.com a lot just for my marketing lists.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I use that, and I can pull certain demographics of property owners, and that's where we send a lot of direct mail to.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Okay, good. Yep. That's a good one. Yep. How about favorite app?
Oh, by far Voxer, V-O-X-E-R. It's how I communicate with my whole team. It's how I communicate with my clients. All the important communication goes right there. It works like a little walkie-talkie, but it has a delay, so you can, like a text message, so you can listen to it anytime you want.
Yeah, that's what I've heard about that. That sounds very cool. Mm-hmm. Very neat. How about your favorite quote?
Ooh, I've got so many. But I will say, I think it's Mark Twain, and I might butcher it a little bit, but you'll get the gist, is... learn from other people's mistakes, for you won't be here long enough to make them all on your own.
I love it. I don't know, man. I think I've learned. I think I've done them all. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Yeah. And here's sort of our apocalyptic question here. If you lost everything. Okay. Well, I think you've been there, done that. But nonetheless, if you lost everything you have now, and all you had was $1,000 in cash, what would you do with that $1,000 to try to rebuild your business?
I probably wouldn't even need the $1,000 in cash to do it. I would start...
I believe that.
Yeah, I would start the exact same way I did, is I would find other people that had properties to sell, and I would go and find buyers for them. And that's exactly how I started. And I did it with zero marketing dollars, and... I didn't even know people still responded to direct mail when I got started. And I didn't even know that was an option. But it's a people business. And every piece of real estate you buy or sell is going to be from or to another person. So you just need to put yourself in between buyers and sellers to get started.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you might have to pay a little for a Kiwanis meeting fee.
Yeah, memberships and stuff. But if you go to meetup.com, I mean, all of those are free to attend. There's so many entrepreneurial groups and real estate groups and all types of networking groups. Like, you go to the wine tasting group and you meet a bunch of people that would be interested in what you got.
That's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. I love it. This has been fantastic, Matt. You're so precise. Okay, usually I run over here, and I'm kind of going. Your answers are very concise and to the point. So and it's stuff that people can take home with them. So I love it. It's really been awesome talking to you. I'm sure there's folks that are listening that want to find out more about you, what you do. You know, just check you out. Sure. What's the best way for our folks to reach you, find out about you, go see you, whatever it is?
Sure. That, I guess if they're listening to us right now, they know how to find a podcast. And we are starting our 9th year of our podcast with weekly episodes for over 8 years now. That's Epic wow. Real Estate Investing. Epic Real Estate Investing.
9 years, man. That was like podcast. What did they used to? They didn't even have uploads at that time.
No one even knew what a podcast was. I came home and told my wife, I'm going to start a podcast. And she says, what's a podcast? Well, it's this thing where it's like this on-demand radio thing. And I'm just going to talk about real estate. I'm going to give all my information away. And she says, well, how is that going to work? I was like, I don't know, but someone told me to do it. So I'm going to do it. And here we are 8 years later. And, you know, it's been a huge blessing. I had no idea what it was going to deliver.
Very cool. And it's a great show. Great show. I recommend it highly. Yeah, kind of warned you early on here that, you know, the way we close this out is just seeing how well you howl. And, you know, so this is really where we judge our guests right now.
Got you
know, this is where the rubber meets the road right now.
Got it. I do it Marine Corps style.
There you go. That's what we're looking for, man.
All right.
Oh, that was a lie, man. That was a good one. That was a good one. That sounded very Marine Corps.
Don't howl, we bark. So
yeah, I love it. Well, Matt, thank you so much for being our guest today. This has been really fun.
You bet, Bill. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And I also want to thank all those old dog listeners out there, too, that joined us today. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Please note everything we've mentioned here, a lot of the stuff that Matt talked about, as well as a link to his website, and a lot of these resources that we discussed as well are all available at our website at olddogsreinetwork.com, spelled DAWG, of course. Dog. That's the show for today. So remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.